evening, everybody, and welcome to another one of our live episodes of The Breakdown. It is Wednesday, November 23rd, and we have, as always, a whole lot to talk about. There's been quite a bit that's gone on in the last couple of days, so we're going to do a little bit of a rundown before we get to our sort of open house roundtable. We're going to be joined by Deirdre Mitchell-McLean, as well as, fingers crossed, if she's feeling up for it, Sarah Biggs. And we're gonna get into the whole question of how did the Premier's address to the province go? How was the response that came from Rachel Notley? What are the implications of the things that were announced on Wednesday? And a whole bunch more from there. But before we get into that part, we're going to go through sort of the events of the week. So the week started out with a fairly interesting little story that came out of the Toronto Star. So for anybody who's been following Alberta politics for a little while now, you probably have recognized that Daniel Smith has had some appropriation of identity problems. There was quite a bit of furor last week where it was revealed that despite the fact that Daniel Smith has trundled out this claim that she has Indigenous or First Nations heritage, there's literally no evidence to back that up other than dining room table stories that were shared by her family. She says she rebutted that by saying, well, you know, I've never done a deep dive. I've never looked into it. I just really like the stories, I guess. Well, there's more, because the Toronto Star did a deep dive in regards to Daniel Smith's claims that her great-grandfather fled communism after World War I. But they took a look at the historical records, and one of the problems is it turns out he arrived in Halifax 4 years before the Russian Revolution. Smith has claimed that he fled because he was trying to get away from the Russian Revolution and communism. And he actually fled 1 year before the World War began. So yet again, we have another example where Smith seems to be entirely willing to identify with certain cultures, certain groups, if it's politically expedient for her, if it serves her. And it seems to be continuing that whether or not those claims have any basis of in reality is really kind of secondary. Moving on from there, Minister of Justice, Tyler Shandro, had a very busy day today. And again, November 23rd. He started the day off by issuing a statement that the RCMP commissioner had to be removed. And he cited a couple of reasons for this. One of them was the idea that there needed to be a real rebuilding of trust. And the RCMP commissioner had failed to do that. She had put the integrity of a shooting investigation potentially at risk, he alleges. And the big thing that he opened with is that after 2 years, she had not addressed the issues of systemic racism in the RCMP. She hadn't fixed systemic racism yet. Can't help but think Alberta's still got some pretty big systemic racism issues. And the UCP has been in power for 3.5 years, a full year and a half longer than the RCMP commissioner. Now, there's a lot of people who are saying that there are legitimate reasons to have concerns with the RCMP commissioner, and that's most likely true. But the fact that Shandro is calling for the feds to get rid of her for reasons that she hasn't made progress on things that his own government hasn't made progress on things is kind of a little bit telling. But that wasn't all that he got upset about today. Today, he issued a statement where he basically lit his hair on fire because the federal government, many people have heard, it's been a big topic of conversation, especially in Alberta, many people have heard about the fact that the federal government has implemented some new restrictions in regards to firearms. They've made a bunch of firearms illegal. They've made a bunch of firearms illegal to trade. They've said that they're going to be instituting a buyback program. A lot of people are very unhappy with this. Well, they issued an amendment just recently, where they said, hey, you know what? We got a couple other things that we want to add to this. We're going to go over those in just a sec, because there's one section of the amendment that people seem to have really gotten upset over. But Mr. Shandro decided to be a little hyperbolic and try to show up in the federal government's metaphorical driveway, where he said, with the amendments tabled on November 22nd, it has become increasingly clear that these actions are not enough. The federal government is clearly, there's no question, they're seeking to ban legal firearm ownership altogether, which is not what it appears that they're trying to do. It's certainly not what the amendment appears to be trying to do. And then he goes on to say, in the coming weeks, Alberta will explore all available options to take action. So if we take a look at what the actual amendment is, what it says, the big piece that has everybody upset, is that a firearm that is a rifle or a shotgun that is capable of discharging centerfire ammunition in a semi-automatic manner and that is designed to accept a detachable cartridge magazine with a capacity greater than 5 cartridges of the type for which the firearm was originally designed. So basically what it's talking about is you have to have a gun, a long gun, that shoots a specific kind of ammunition. It has to be able to shoot that kind of ammunition at a semi-automatic rate of fire. So you pull the trigger once, it shoots and automatically reloads. But you have to pull the trigger once for each shot. And it also has to have, and this is the important part, a cartridge magazine greater than 5 cartridges. So you have to be able to put a clip in the gun that holds more than 5 bullets. And that's not really unreasonable. Because if we think about the type of people who are typically using firearms, one of the big defenses that has been talked about in regards to this gun grab is, oh, the hunters. If you talk to anybody who's done any hunting of any kind, and you ask them, if you need more than 5 shots to harvest whatever animal it is that you're trying to harvest, are you any good? Should you be hunting? The answer will resoundingly be no. I'm not a hunter myself. I know a lot of people who hunt. I have a lot of friends who hunt, and I don't begrudge certainly anybody who hunts particular, well, sport hunting is a different thing, but somebody who's hunting for harvesting, an animal for meat, I don't have a problem with that. And every single one of those people that I know laugh at these cartridge rules because the idea that you would need more than 1-2 at the most shots to drop even a large animal is absolutely ludicrous, and it means you're a garbage hunter. But that hasn't stopped Minister of Justice Tyler Shandro from trying to make the biggest possible tempest out of a teapot that he can. Moving on from there, and we've only got a couple of little things that we're going to touch on tonight before we get to the main event with Deirdre and Sarah, but this is one that I definitely wanted to talk about myself. And I'm going to do a disclosure for bias, not necessarily means that I have any kind of authority on this, but as I have related on the show before, I work professionally as a paramedic. So when we're talking about the Alberta Paramedic Association, yeah, I've got a bit of a bias that's going on because it's literally an organization that is arguably affiliated with what I do professionally. So where this all kind of kicked off this week is the Alberta Paramedic Association released a tweet from the Alberta Paramedic Association president account, which appears to, by many reports, have been migrated from the Alberta Paramedic Association account. Now, some of you might be wondering, before we get too far into this, what is the Alberta Paramedic Association? Effectively, it's a private club. It doesn't hold any legal standing to represent paramedics in the province of Alberta. It's just a bunch of people who got together and said, hey, you know what? We should try to be the group that represents paramedics in Alberta. The union that represents the paramedics in Alberta is HSAA, or the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. We've had Mike Parker on the show before. He's the president of HSAA. They're the ones who are responsible for representing the profession of paramedics in most professional settings. The Alberta Paramedic Association has their own agenda, let's say, to start with. And that agenda started to become quite clear this week when they tweeted out and were retweeted by Health Minister Jason Copping. The APA supports the government commitment to put the paramedic and EMS response times as provincial priorities. We have been advocating for system changes. The UCP government has been listening and taking it seriously. We are pleased to be a part of the solution. And then they tag Jason Copping and Daniel Smith. Now, a lot of people are wondering, given that this is an organization that's supposed to be representing paramedics, why are they basically standing behind the provincial government and going, woo? It's a really good question. And if you dig into the APA and who has historically been running that president account, at least for the last couple of years, things start to make a bit more sense because we're talking about a guy named Dusty Mishral. And I apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. Dusty has a very historically healthy relationship with the UCP government in particular. It was at the beginning of October 6, 2020. Dusty appeared in a promo video where they used a clip of him in an interview where he was talking about the benefits, the wonderful benefits of centralized dispatch. Now, for anybody who's been paying attention to municipal and provincial politics for a little while, you probably know there's a lot of municipalities who are really, really angry about losing the ability to dispatch ambulances, particularly when we're talking about larger centers. Calgary, it was a huge issue. It was even an issue in the municipal election. It was certainly an issue in Red Deer. It was certainly an issue in Fort Mac. It was certainly an issue in Lethbridge. There's lots of places that were like, we do not want to do this centralized dispatch. There are a lot of people who raised a lot of concerns that many people felt were very, very legitimate. But nonetheless, here's Dusty in the UCP promo video being tweeted out by Tyler Chandra, who was at the time Minister of Health, with this audio clip of Dusty saying, yeah, centralized dispatch, it's going to be the best thing ever, going to fix so many problems. Now, after we pulled up this tweet, we couldn't help but notice, because it's just the cherry on top, where Dusty made these comments. So it is credited in the tweet that these comments were made on October 2nd of 2020, and they appeared on none other than the Danielle Smith Show. So that's just kind of perfect for where we're going from here, because it wasn't far after that that Dusty then appeared taking, it seemed like, the lion's share of the credit for the initiative that was started by, from the ground up, really, by a group of paramedics who were trying to ensure that paramedics were being vaccinated in the early days of COVID. The reality was lots of paramedics were going into the houses of people who had COVID and were desperate, as the very, very sharp end of the pointy stick, to do everything they could to get vaccinated. There was a bunch of grassroots groups that were advocating for it. HSAA advocated for it as well. But nonetheless, Dusty appeared at the official UCP government press conference, where he said he's thankful he had the opportunity to stand at the Alberta government podium during the COVID-19 update. It was an absolute honor to be here on the day the government announces paramedics will be vaccinated in phase one and speak about the importance of paramedics. If it looks like Dusty really wants to be behind that podium, there's a reason coming for that. Wasn't long after that that we saw Dusty during Tyler Chandro's Best Summer Ever tour, after all of the restrictions had largely been lifted and we were having the best summer ever right before we went into what was at the time the worst wave ever, where Dusty appeared leaning on the back of a tailgate with Tyler Chandro, enjoying a fine cup of Tim Hortons coffee, where he said, it was a pleasure to meet with our health minister today to discuss paramedics' rural health care and how paramedics can be utilized to improve health services within our communities. Thank you, Chandro, for taking time to speak with me today. And here's where the other shoe drops. Because as it turns out, Dusty's seeking the UCP nomination in Lacombe, Ponoka. This is Ron Orr's current constituency, and the talk is that Mr. Orr will not be seeking renomination. He won't be seeking re-election. So here we have Dusty, who's been very, very, very friendly with the UCP, particularly Tyler Chandro as health minister. He appears in this lovely photo that was published in his own press release. So this wasn't a photo that somebody's like, ha, ha, ha. This was the photo that Dusty chose to release, where he's appearing with Pierre Poilievre in a inappropriately sized cowboy hat. Now, there's a couple of other things that are interesting that appear in this article, because Dusty talks about how he was one of the founders of the APA. And he talks about how he's been the president for the last 6 years. And that got us kind of curious. How far back does the APA go? And so we went a little bit through their Twitter timeline. And on October 1st of 2015, and this is already a few years after the APA was a thing, the APA announced that their new board was Roger Tucson, president, Chris Hardcastle, vice president, Brandon Turnbull, secretary, and Mark Mebus, executive director. Dusty's name isn't on the board, which is kind of weird for somebody who's claiming that he was one of the founding members of the organization. And in fact, Dusty didn't appear as president until 2016. But he's claiming, again, that he was one of the founders. So we did a little bit more digging. How far back do we have to go to find out when the APA became a thing? Because their paper trail is a little, let's go with erratic. A little hard to track down. Well, they started their Twitter account in June of 2013. And it turns out they also started their Facebook account at exactly the same time. So the APA seems to have existed well before Dusty was the president. And it's fascinating that he calls himself the founder, particularly when the APA is now tweeting out, this organization that's supposed to represent paramedics is now tweeting out a very pro-UCP tweet. Now, after a bunch of people took notice of this tweet, there was a pretty decent-sized outcry for a fairly niche issue. But after all of that happened, then the APA, over the last day or so, has quietly issued an announcement on their website where they've said, oh, yeah, no, Dusty's, he stepped away now, so it's not that. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But it's really quite telling that here's an organization that by many descriptions definitely meets the qualifications of an AstroTurf organization. It's also worth noting that several of the people who are high-ranking people in the Alberta Paramedic Association have very, very, very close ties to private companies that like to provide private ambulance services. Here's this organization where a lot of the high-ranking people have histories or work with private ambulance companies. This organization was tapped by the UCP government to be part of the EMS response plan, the 10-point plan that they came up with that appears to have negligible effect based on the reports that we've seen in media. That's just very interesting, let's say. But the big story this week so far, because it is only Wednesday, absolutely has to be the fact that Danielle Smith, she appeared at an address to the province. She bought 10 minutes of airtime on Global and CTV, apparently. Or maybe they just gave it to her for free because, you know, they have a relationship, some of them going back. And she talked about some of the things that she was going to do. She had some big announcements. And the two big-ish announcements, well, the first one, she talked about inflation relief. So apparently when the legislature goes back into session on the 29th of this month, one of the big priorities is going to be the Inflation Relief Act. And in it, she announced that there's going to be $600 over 6 months to parents for each child under 18, as well as every senior, as long as there are household incomes under $180,000. So if you have kids and they're under 18, and you make less than $180,000 a year, you're going to get $600 per kid over 6 months. It's almost like Klein bucks, but Danny bucks, and very targeted. And if you don't have kids, well, I guess it just sucks to be you. She's also going to do a top-up of $600 over 6 months to AISH, where she's going to be supporting AISH and PDD, so people with disabilities are going to also be getting that same $600 top up. She's going to be suspending the entire provincial fuel tax for at least 6 months, which is going to represent a not insubstantial dent on provincial revenue. They're going to index all provincial tax brackets retroactive to 2022. They're going to index HPDD, Seniors Benefits, Alberta Child and Family Benefit, and Income Support Program beginning this January. So right in time for after Christmas and the holiday crunch, they're going to reverse, to what degree we don't know, the cutbacks that they made to AISH. They're going to be providing $200 per home in rebates on consumer electricity bills. Again, that's going to be coming January to April. They're going to limit spikes in winter electricity rates. They're going to continue natural gas rebate programs, and they're going to invest in food banks and low-income transit passes. But they also had a healthcare plan. They have a healthcare action plan where they're going to decrease emergency wait room times. They're going to improve ambulance response times, and they're going to reduce wait times for surgeries. How? Don't you worry your pretty little head about that. They're just going to do it. And this kind of harkens back to the press conference that Danielle Smith did, where she appeared with the new administrator after she fired the entire AHS health AHS governance board to replace him with this administrator, where when they were asked, what kind of benchmarks are you going to put into place? How are you going to know? And Smith's response was, it'll just be better. So guess it'll just be better. But she also had some pretty strong words about the Sovereignty Act. And God willing, the video is going to play tonight.
I'd also like to speak about our province's relationship with Ottawa. As Albertans, we love our nation deeply. Canada is our home, and Canadians are family. However, the federal government's treatment of all provinces, most especially Alberta, is unacceptable. The government in Ottawa is intentionally and systematically attempting to control and regulate all aspects of our province's economy, resources, and social programs. Through equalization and transfers, they funnel billions of your tax dollars away from you and into a black hole of federal bureaucracy and vote-buying arrangements in other parts of the country. These continual federal attacks on our economy and provincial rights cannot be allowed to continue. The Canadian Constitution is clear. The federal and provincial governments are equals. We both have sovereign areas of exclusive federal and provincial jurisdiction. Albertans, not Ottawa, are in charge of developing and exporting our resources, growing our economy, and delivering healthcare, education, childcare, and other programs in the manner that we, as Albertans, choose. In about a week's time, our government will introduce the Alberta Sovereignty Within a United Canada Act. This legislation is designed to be a constitutional shield to protect Albertans so that when Ottawa implements a policy or law attacking our economy or provincial rights, our government will not enforce these unconstitutional measures in Alberta. We will put the rights of Albertans first, always. Now, some are attempting to scare folks into thinking that this legislation has something to do with leaving Canada. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, this new law will have the opposite effect. By restoring and respecting the constitutional rights of our creative and diverse provinces, including Alberta, Canada will become stronger, more prosperous, and more unified than ever.
Now, there's a whole lot to unpack there, because once again, we've seen a fantastic misrepresentation of how the equalization program actually works. Once again, for anybody who doesn't understand it, the way the equalization program works is everybody across Canada pays income tax. That income tax then goes into a federal fund. That federal fund is used to buy things, as Dr. Trevor Toombs said when we interviewed him a couple of years ago, buy things like staplers or paper clips. And some of it goes to provinces that do not have the same standard of living and the same ability to afford the things that other provinces do. That's it. Alberta doesn't pay transfer payments. Transfer payments aren't things that provinces pay. They're things that provinces receive. But Danielle Smith wants to misrepresent that and talk about the idea that transfer payments are somehow used to buy votes, because people will vote for you if you give them money on the same night that she announced she's giving people money. A little dissonant. But spectacularly on brand at the same time. She also says a bunch of things about it's not called the Alberta Sovereignty Act anymore. It's called the Act for Alberta Sovereignty Inside of United Canada, which is, as watering down the drinks go, you're lucky at this point if you can taste any of the rum, because it is a huge pivot from what she campaigned on. And it's going to be fascinating to see how her base responds to that, because she promised them all out war with the federal government. We're going to just refuse to do the things. But now she's saying that this act is going to be the thing that saves not just Alberta, it's going to save Canada, because we don't have a problem making grandiose statements here in Alberta. It's kind of our brand. Now, there's a lot of other things that were said in the speech, and there was a very interesting, I've taken to calling it a bedtime story, response that we saw from the Alberta NDP. But to get a little bit more perspective on it, I'm very excited to welcome to the show both Sarah Biggs and Deirdre Mitchell-McLean. How are we doing tonight?
Hi.
There's Sarah Biggs. How are you feeling, Sarah? You're feeling a little rough on Sunday.
I have COVID.
Well, that's not great.
So Monday I called my surgeon to cancel my knee surgery follow-up I had on Tuesday because, I have symptoms. When I was on the phone with them, I was like, oh, let me stick a Q-tip up my nose and see what's going on. And I was like, oh shit, I'm COVID positive. I was feeling a little stuffed up, right? I thought it was a sinus thing. But ends up I have COVID. So kids are clear.
That's good.
It's just my husband and I now. My 10-year-old had a very, very faint. The little one tested negative this week, but it's the rapid tests are hard on toddlers.
Well, I can tell you I'm not a big fan of having the Q-tip up my nose either, but I'm a giant man child, so what are you gonna do? Well, I hope you're feeling are you on the upward curve, or are you still?
I had a very, very faint positive today. So basically what I did, I slept for like 20 hours.
Well, that's good.
So my mother-in-law was kind enough to take Maddie for 24 hours
Well, that's good.
and let us sleep. So yeah, I'm doing just fine.
That's very good. Deirdre, how are you doing?
Still COVID negative.
Well, all the cool kids are.
I know it's been a pretty good week. It a little bit. I found the announcement a little anticlimactic. Originally, I was kind of hoping that she might address the spat that her and Rachel Notley are having online. And then I was like, oh, no, it's not that. I'm like, it's going to be policies. It's going to be how they're going to give Albertans money. And so, yeah, so that was a little anticlimactic, but not nearly as anticlimactic as the response.
Did it feel so like I have a lot I want to say about the response, because it made me sleepy. But before we get to that, what was your, I mean, Smith brought out three ideas, I guess. She brought out the stuff to address cost of living. She brought out the super detailed plan for healthcare. Things will be better. I just don't understand. I don't get that. And then she did her, the feds are just the worst, everybody. But we've got the Sovereignty Act and we're going to save Canada. What did you take? What were the big impressions that you had with that?
First of all, Smith is an interesting character because, and I've been trying to figure out like exactly what this difference is, because I was able to mock Jason Kenney in a way that amused me and others, and and that was enjoyable. And I think I was able to do that because I do believe that Jason Kenney wanted to be successful. Like he wanted to be the premier that would have this legacy of just being fantastic. And I think that that was his thing. And Danielle Smith believes, I fully believe that she believes the shit that comes out of her mouth. And I find that terrifying, actually. And I find that I can't make fun of it as easily. I'm still trying to get there. But so when I'm listening to, like, and I believe it was Stephen Carter who tweeted out, he's like, I can't believe how much she has lied during such a short announcement. And I sat there in awe. Because the things that she says about how, the feds are just, they're ruining Alberta's capacity to build their economy and all of this. And it's like, holy cow. It's jaw-dropping to me still that that they say this, but the thing is, I believe they believe it. It's just still jaw-dropping to me. So what was going through my head at the time was, we are in so much trouble. Like, we are in so much trouble. And kind of like I said on Sunday, if you're not going to, if you're going to create your own problems and try and solve them instead of finding real solutions, real problems that we have, again, we're in trouble. So
yeah,
what was going through my head was,
I mean, there was,
again,
yeah,
we're in trouble.
I don't think you're wrong. I think she does believe a lot of the things that she says, I think, which is objectively terrifying because so many of them are just like demonstrably not true. But they do resonate with her base. They do resonate with that we are victims of the federal government, and the reason why our lives are hard isn't because of anything we're doing. It's because of Justin Trudeau. So there's a part of me that can kind of understand. It is the most craven of strategies, to be sure. But I can kind of
understand. But it's Florida too, right? Like, this is, it's not new to hear someone say this. It's just new to hear someone say this in such a way that it's not like they're doing it for political gain, because you can tell, right, when someone is just saying something because they believe they should. You don't get that feeling from Smith.
Oh, I think she believes it. And I think that, but I also think that, you know, there's a very real possibility that there is a part of her that does recognize, if I use these words, then I will get money and votes. I mean, she is, as she acknowledged herself, and the implication that she made when she was talking about her media history was that she has made a career out of saying, frankly, batshit crazy things in order to drive ratings and drive attention and get advertising dollars. And that wasn't the first time that she's alluded to that. She's said it in the past as well, that she knows that when you're part of the media landscape, big air quotes going on there, that you say ridiculous stuff to get people to pay more attention to you. For the record, we don't do that here. We use puppets for that. I don't think that it's outside of her bandwidth for her to say ridiculous stuff in order to get attention and get the support she needs. But I want to throw it to Sarah here, because Sarah's struggling through the night and she showed up with COVID, for God's sakes. So Sarah, what do you take away from, what are your big takeaways from Smith's, the words that she put together in combinations that were often not accurate? What was your takeaway?
Well, you know, like, I like to call them sometimes your alternative facts, right? It's always everybody has their own version of and perception of reality, so we'll put it that way. Do I believe that she tried to help? Yes. Would have any government have done that at any given time, 6 months before an election? Absolutely. But yeah, there's a lot of things I didn't agree with her. But I think that what we need to, I put out a tweet this week saying, Smith's going to be calm, measured. Everything's going to be calculated. She's going to be on script. So for, Ron and Brenda from High Prairie, that is not on Twitter, that is not on Facebook. They're listening to news. They kind of know what's happening. They tune in for the address while they're making dinner, and they're like, oh, yeah, okay, she sounds fine. Smith last night, on the technical strategy point of view, delivered.
It was wild for me to see her speak without all of the little mannerisms that she's developed for when she's making stuff up. Like, it was very clear that she made all of this stuff up in advance, so she knew where she was going to go with it. But it was very different, Danielle Smith, than we've seen from even her acceptance speech at the UCP leadership race, where she had a script. And then you could pick the moments in time where she was going to, like, and now I'm going to say my own stuff. And then she would go back to the script.
Here's the thing. The environment around the premiere has changed. Some people have moved on. Some people, they brought on new people with are more like moderates. I'm not trying to excuse anything. I'm just like kind of trying to explain what's happening in the background. And there's a lot of players that are involved. They're somewhat a little bit more, how could I say, moderate, if we could
less
say
impulsive.
That are saying, look, you cannot continue on the path that you are going because you are going to lose. So Smith, even if we all agreed that, you know, some of her statements were more than questionable. She is starting to soften in order to be able to win the next election. Because I strongly believe that they blatantly looked at her. And like, you can't do this. We're going to lose. So Smith has to shift. She does not have a choice.
So here's the question then. I mean, Smith, there's no doubt based on the most recent polling available, he said from a slightly snarky tone because there was a Twitter exchange on that one. based on the most recent polling, Smith, I mean, we know that after she won the leadership race, she didn't get that bump that you would expect to see from somebody who's finished a leadership race. We know that it doesn't appear that she's had any of the sort of bumps. If you're Danielle Smith's team, are you looking at her performance and the announcements and are you going like, oh, thank God we're finally starting to climb out of the hole? Or are you going...
Yeah. If you compare it to the answer that the NDP provided last night, Smith won the battle of the speeches last night.
So let's get into the NDP side. Because I know that you're on a bit of a timeline, so I don't want to keep it too long. But, I mean, I watched the Smith one, and then I had to go looking all over the place for the NDP one, which to me was like right out of the gates a weird problem to navigate, because if Danielle Smith has just made all of these major announcements and she's just promised, you know, family $600 per kid for a family of four, that's not small money.
No.
And when you get to some of the families that are in her base, I mean, some people are going to be bringing home like $1,500, $1,600 a month. But
they assumed a lot of things last night. And if I would have been there. So, A, you have the money, buy the prime time. Buy it. Don't go on YouTube and hope the media is going to cover it. Two, she should have taken questions after. Three, she should have done it a little later than right after, because she did not have the details of what Smith was going to announce.
Well, Smith was pretty light on details, though.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Like, it was very reactionary. I would have waited a little bit, measure my response, and come up with a much more substantial answer than what they have given us last night. That's what I would have done.
Okay.
Fully agree.
What do I know?
Well, Deirdre agrees with you. Deirdre, what did you make of the response?
I fully agree with Sarah. They should have waited. And now it wasn't a live address either. It was delivered, I believe it was embargoed for noon. So news agencies had that, I think, at noon. and it was embargoed until 6:30 when they could actually put it out.
So her response was before.
It was at Sea Space in Calgary, just saying. It was shot at Sea Space.
So the response was filmed well in advance of Smith's actual remarks.
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
It was. Yeah. So that's why, you know, it was easy for them to say no media, no questions, because they weren't doing it live.
Yeah, they were gone 8 hours ago.
Yeah. And so that's part of it. And where I fully agree with Sarah, I mean, actually through all of it, but in particular, there was no need for Rachel Notley to go live immediately after. There was no need for it. They should have had a group who all sat and watched it, like a group of their comms team, their strategists, and they should have really just, you know, talked some shit about it and then made their statement, put their statement together, and worst case scenario, put it out the next morning, first thing.
Yeah, and get the noon cycle.
That's right.
Yeah. But
Like right after, and again, like Sarah said, if you've got the money, and the NDP does have the money.
Oh boy, they do.
We've been seeing this for years, so we know they have the money. Then why are you doing a Facebook Live when you could have, you know, done an actual presser with all of the news channels the next morning?
And take questions. And bring numbers out and bring clarity.
Yeah.
That's what the social media of the UCP is really, really good for the past 2 days, and I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, here's my question about the response, because the thing that struck me the most, I mean, Rachel Notley didn't say anything that was controversial. She didn't say anything that was, I would say, particularly bold. I mean, she was the short version is Danielle sucks and we don't, so please vote for us, Kay. But what really struck me as I was watching it was the tone was not reflective of, I think, a lot of the mood of the NDP supporters, and certainly people who are willing to look at the NDP as an option potentially in May, if that's when the election is.
Excuse me. And the optics of it too. She looked uncomfortable. She looked a little shy. She was very on script. She was not her natural self. There was something that was different last night. And I keep, you know, I've been texting you, Nate. I watched it 100 times now, 4 or 5 times. I'm trying to put my finger on what is different, but something was different last night.
It just felt to me like even the tone of voice was very soft.
Yeah.
It was very calm.
It was very soft. It was... But right now, what the NDP supporters, you know, what they want to see is somebody that stands strong, that has a strong voice, that is assertive, and can bring solutions and numbers. Because when you bring numbers to the table, people listen. It's one thing to say, yeah, but we will fix it. We will fix that. We hear you. Okay, give me numbers.
But even where you said, we will fix this, we will fix that, there, Sarah, you had, I think, more gusto than what we saw from Notley last night. Last night was very, we will fix this. It's okay. It felt like almost like a hypnotherapy session or something where, you know, look into the light. So, but Deirdre, did you pick up any of that? Am I completely off base or?
No. So yes, I picked up on it. No, you're not completely off base.
Okay, good.
One of the things that I really noticed, like I suppose I noticed it last night, but I really looked at it more today. And I mean, let's consider ourselves a focus group. Everyone here who either watched it or is going to watch it, consider yourself the target audience for this announcement. And when you're looking at the two of them, so, you know, Danielle Smith looked much more polished than she has at any point so far in any of this, right? That was a huge step up. She looked more polished, and Rachel Notley kind of came out like, I'm the every person who's going to be premier. And it just really didn't work in the same way. Think back to 2015, Rachel Notley in her white suit. She was this very, she was a person that was commanding a presence, right? Or she had a commanding presence. And that's why she stood out so much. And that's also why, you know, the response was so underwhelming, because it just, it was not that same person. And again, you know, who are you going up against? You could position yourself as the every person and the, you know, the calm individual. But what Danielle Smith did was she presented herself as the professional, can-do leader of the province. And so they were mismatched. And again, something that could have been fixed by waiting until the next day.
Well, this was one of the things that struck me as well, is that, I mean, I can't really think of any distinct facts that Rachel Notley threw out there. She spoke in broad ideas, and certainly some of those ideas were in opposition to some of Smith's things. But it was again very flat. Whereas you take a look at Smith, and as much as she lied her whole way through that thing, and what facts, again, air quoting the hell out of this, what facts she threw up were demonstrably not. The equalization bit was patently false. The accusations about the federal government working to shut down Alberta, as you know, they continue to go with TMX and it's ballooned in cost. They haven't shut that down. There's so many things that Danielle Smith had said that were patent bullshit, but because of the way she said it to her base, to people who are not the hyper-engaged politicos, and especially if there is sort of any of that life is unfair going on, it's very, very easy for somebody, I imagine, to look at Danielle Smith and go, hey, she's got some fight in her. She's going to fight for me. And, oh, I didn't know all that stuff about the federal government. Man, we're getting screwed. We need somebody who's going to fight for us like that. It's very similar to the tone that that Jason Kenney rolled out. But she took it that step farther with the Sovereignty Act light. All the flavor, no calories version that she rolled out there. I mean, I'm going to throw this one to you, Deirdre, because you live in rural Alberta. Just on delivery and content alone, who do you think was more? I mean, Sarah's already said win for Smith from a communication standpoint. Are you on the same page?
Absolutely. It was, because the thing is, like, you do have to kind of remove yourself and say, what would my neighbors think? And like, I'm the hyper engaged, right? So, you know, those of us who are listening to that speech going, lie, 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 lie. This is difficult to watch. But if you're not that highly engaged, which most people are not, we have to always remember that, you know, 90% of people do not have memberships, do not follow politics. They're seeing this as a one-off. And that may be all that they see. And it was fantastic. But that was always going to be an issue for any opposition of Danielle Smith, right? She's a very, very good orator. I do care that she says things that are patently false. But most people don't know that they are.
Well, this is the thing. You go into the equalization thing as an easy example. The reason why so many politicians either lie about equalization or let it go uncorrected is because they know the overwhelming majority of people don't understand that when you say equalization payments, you're talking about something that's being received, not being made. So it's politically expedient for them to be like, oh yeah, equalization's the absolute worst. But this is where, go ahead.
Alberta has been primed for this for, what are we going on now? 1981 to 2001 is 40 years. 40 years, Albertans have been primed for exactly this commentary. They have.
You're not wrong.
We have.
Plus, we've got a Trudeau now, so we can be even angrier about that.
Yeah. Oh, that was always the...
the province, it's... You know, equalization payments should be taught in school, in civic classes or social studies, whatever you're calling it.
Because we have...
I think it's just Zed equivalent. Now.
We've been raised with a very specific understanding and, you know, a belief on how equalization payments work. There's the hatred towards Quebec that plays in it. And then whenever there's a liberal, the hell, well, everything breaks loose, right? You know, last night she tried to reach out to everyday Albertan, and she did just that.
So
I think that's what we need to, you know, like I said, Rob and Brenda from Grand Prairie, they were making dinner, they listened to Smith. And they're like, oh yeah, okay, that helps us, cool. I have a small business, I'm paying, you know, that fuel tax break's gonna help. Or I'm struggling to heat my home, that extra $200 will help. And you know, people will see that.
So,
and that's, I think that's what the NDP miscalculated, is that they didn't see it that way.
So
even if they tried to paint it differently, at the end of the day, you know, they will see it as what it is. They won't take it for face value.
Okay. So my next question then is, I mean, we talked about some of the at the top of the show. We talked about some of the other stories that have been going on. The Tyler Shandro, I guess being Tyler Shandro again, certainly could have been a big news story. The fact that it has been investigated and it is found to be without support, yet again, another one of Danielle Smith's claims that she's used to get herself out of hot water. She used the Cherokee comment recently in order to try to distance herself from the very bad videos that were circulating of some of her campaign staff, allegedly. And she used the Ukrainian piece to try to distance herself from the, oh, Ukraine, you should have just been neutral and gotten rid of your nukes, even though they did. So she has, you know, those are in normal times, not insignificant stories, but it seems like, I mean, we've certainly spent the last half hour and change talking about the speeches and the initiatives that she introduced or maybe just broadly spoke of in her speech. It seems like she's changed the channel. So I guess the question that I want to ask to each of you is, do you think that Danielle Smith has successfully changed the channel? She threw in the bit at the end where she was like, hey guys, you know, people say things and you're going to say some things and you can't be upset when people say things at the end, similarly to how she threw it in at her leadership race, where she's clearly trying to disarm her own comments and rhetoric. Has she changed the channel? Does Danielle Smith get to put on a new show for Alberta starting on the 29th? Deirdre, I'm going to ask you first.
You might not like this one either. She did a fantastic job with that. Everyone wants to be forgiven for saying something stupid. Right? We've all done it. We've all maybe spouted something that we were like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Or, oh, that was really wrong. I'm, you know, semi-embarrassed that I did that. And she really, I think her, I can't call it a mea culpa, her, you know, forgive me for this, actually, you know, spoke to me in a way that I'm pretty sure spoke to a lot of people who, like I said, everyone wants to be forgiven for having a bad take now and then. And very unfortunately, because I don't believe that the person that became premier is somehow radically different than the person who was in media for the last however many years and the person who used to be a politician. You're still the same person. You might not try to get the clicks, but you're still the same person. However, I think she probably caught a lot of people with that.
All right. Sarah, did Danielle Smith cancel culture?
You're not going to like me. I don't think you're going to like us tonight.
I always like you guys.
So here's the thing. She asked for forgiveness this week. She's going to present her Alberta sovereignty within a strong Canada, whatever it's called, next week.
I think she's just going to save it to the Let's Save Canada Act, but I don't know.
Then she's going to be like, see, guys, it's not that bad. And then she's going to put to legislation everything that she has promised yesterday. We're going to see what kind of agenda with the throne speech on Tuesday. We're going to have a better idea. But here's the thing. Christmas will happen. Budget will happen. And if they come up with a very, very strong budget with a surplus, and they see that some of those monies are being directed where it is needed, maybe she's going to be able to turn it around. It all depends on how they're going to be playing their budget and their budget cycle and their budget tour after that. Because usually when you're running a budget and a budget tour, you try to make it really, really, really strong. That's why it was a little bit odd that the UCP, the last spring's budget, their tour, open brackets, was extremely weak. So what we're going to see in the next few weeks is the premier trying to rehabilitate her image. She might hold back some of the things that she might have opinions on, or, you know, and maybe, excuse me, she started listening to what could work and what could not work. So it's going to be interesting to see, but can she turn this around? Yes.
So here's the other question then, because I was over at my parents' house for a little bit last night, and we took their dog for a walk, and I was talking with my dad, and my dad is about as progressive a born and raised Albertan that my parents are hippies, which is probably why I'm so punk rock, but I was talking with my dad about the speeches, and the comment from my dad, who's been an NDP supporter for a very, very long time, the comment from my dad was, you know, this was Rachel Notley and the NDP's election to win. And I'm starting to feel more and more like it's not that they're not going to win. They're going to actively lose it. And, you know, with the sentiment that seems to be out there by someone with so many people of sort of enough is enough. Why do you think it is that Rachel Notley didn't adopt any of that tone last night to say, you know what? We deserve better than this.
Maybe I'm going to do I'm going to go into the conspiracies. Maybe they think they already have it in the bag.
Boy, are they going to be surprised.
And that might hurt them. And that's what I'm concerned about. Is that, you know, when you think that you're sure you're having something like 100%, and then you're like, oh, poop. It didn't work. But Deirdre and I have been saying that for a long time. It is for the NDP to lose.
Think back to the leadership, right? How many, staunch NDP supporters kept saying, but if Danielle Smith wins, then the NDP has it. They were so certain.
There were some people who threw some other people a little bit of flack about trying to suggest that maybe Danielle Smith shouldn't be the leader. as I recall, I'm pulling this out of the ether. I don't know.
Did you run a campaign?
Apparently, I ran a campaign. I was really just, chatting people up on Twitter, but it was never certain. It was never certain. It was never a done deal. That.
Assuming in politics is the three-word letter in assuming.
A three-letter word? Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Yeah, my brain is like, I've been struggling with English this week. There's a three-letter.
Well, it's like one of my favorite expressions, which I was...
I'm old enough to remember when it was on the chalkboard.
Yeah. One of my favorite expressions for years and years and years, and I was devastated to find out that I apparently picked this up from RoboCop, is it hurts. I was watching the movie and I heard them say it and I was like, oh my God, that's where I got this from. But the expression is, assumption is the mother of all fuck ups. And it's, I think, largely true.
Yeah, it is absolutely 100% true. And I mean, when you're talking about elections, we were too far out. 6 months, if you can keep the crazy in for 6 months, it was never a done deal. Looking at last night, Rachel Notley needs to come back with more 2015 Rachel Notley and less whatever she's trying to fight this with, because that is not going to work.
So this brings me to my last question of the evening. And then, of course, if anybody who's listening tonight has some thoughts that they want to share or tell us why we're unbelievably wrong about all of the things, we love to hear
it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, guys, if it's not what you want to hear. We're just really providing nonpartisan analysis tonight.
There we go. Sarah, in all fairness, if you were going to give Rachel Notley, Team NDP, one free piece of advice tonight, if you were going to say this is the one thing coming out of last night's Sleepy Time Festival, what is the one piece of advice that you're giving to Rachel Notley?
Can it be bullet points?
Sure.
Put your leader on the podium. Get better locations. Get her to answer questions for the media when she's making statements. Take your time to answer and have more teeth. Show us numbers. Show us what you're going to do. Then people will listen.
All right, Deirdre, if you could ask Rachel Notley or Team Rachel Notley or Team NDP or whatever, if you could give them one piece of advice, if you would say, do this one thing, what's it going to be?
Build out your team.
Yeah.
Who you are asking for advice. Because
yeah, that too.
Is just, it's, we talk about how Danielle Smith is reaching out to the base, but you have to understand that the base that Danielle Smith is reaching out to is bigger than the base that Rachel Notley has. So Rachel Notley cannot talk to the base, and if everyone that is advising her, if her communications team is all sitting in the same bubble, then you are not building out, and you really need to build out who you're talking to, who you're listening to. And in a way, I sort of don't care if you take the advice, but you need to hear it.
Yeah.
Because then you have an opportunity to actually do better.
Don't sing your bubble, yo. We've been talking about how long and how bubbles are dangerous. That's That's what we're seeing. Bubbles, echo chambers are extremely dangerous.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, we've talked a bit about the internal problems of the NDP and some of the internal culture problems that have been, that there have been allegations of. And, you know, one of the things has been that there's this profoundly centralized culture where the decisions are made by a select few. And if you don't play perfectly on the team, then see ya. And we did just see, just a couple of weeks ago, we saw one of their candidates for Calgary, Marilyn North Pagan, was the candidate for Calgary Klein. And within 24 hours of her putting up a tweet that some would argue was controversial, some might say was entirely justified, she was removed as a candidate, which then presumably set the NDP back in Calgary Klein because they got to reboot that whole process. But it seems to be more of that, you know, there's that centralized power structure that makes the decisions and the rest be damned, because it certainly doesn't seem like it was the constituency association that got together and said, we're going to turf her. It came from Party Central, and it came from Party Central very, very quickly. Why are they able to, my last question, because this is what I do. I say last question and then I ask one more. But my last question for each of you is, why do you think that the NDP is able to make decisions in regards to internal party dissent, I'll say, on a dime, but when it comes to recognizing that their messaging isn't resonating, it's not effective, it's not going to get them to where they need to be, why do you think it is that ship takes icebergs before it starts to turn, if it does at all? And I'm going to throw that one to Deirdre first, and then we'll end with Sarah.
So the answer is the same to both. It's a very small group. So if you have a very small group that decides that, you know, this person can't be a candidate, this person's bad for our image, the issue is that the group is too small. And I guess the way that I was kind of thinking about it earlier was that the NDP used to be a very small party, right? They had, what, 4 seats in the legislature?
On a good day.
Going into 2015, like, they've always been around. You know, we used to like to have multiple voices in the legislature. And, you know, the NDP has at least been around for a very long time. But we're talking about a potential government. We're talking about a party that did form government. And what happened when that party formed government was that they said, we can form government. We don't have to listen to anybody else because we did it. And they're just not seeing some of the things that helped them get government that absolutely had nothing to do with them. There was a political landscape in 2015 that just, you know, the stars aligned. People wanted to sack the PC party, and they did, and they did it well. But I will always go back to Scott Payne, who was NDP organizer for Southern Alberta, and on the doors, he was shocked to hear people say, I will vote for your, the Wild Rose or the NDP, whoever is going to beat the PCs in my riding. People are not partisan in general. Some of us are, for sure, but most people aren't. They're going to vote for whatever it is that they feel is actually going to benefit them. It doesn't matter if it's NDP or Wild Rose or UCP or Green Party or Alberta Party. They're going to do what benefits them. And this group is just too small.
All right.
Yeah.
We got a theme going on here, Sarah Biggs. And I have to point out, Deirdre, that your comments there got some hefty approval, I'll say. Sarah Biggs.
Cool.
What are your thoughts? Why did they keep doing this?
The NDP has existed longer than the UCP now. They need to take the stance of a legacy party. That is what it, because if you put it that way, the NDP, either they like it or not, are the progressive party right now. And they need to listen to people. There's no way we can get out of this, or that they can win if they do not expand their base and whom they are listening to. It is so, so, so important that they seek separate advice, that they hear different voices, that they risk different strategies. Because right now, we're going to see it all over 2019 all over again.
Well, that's the thing. Campaign season has started. And
yeah.
this is for all intents and purposes, in many ways, the first campaign speech of the season, the run, whatever you want to call it. And it was,
it's a sad trombone for a launch. Like, you could have gotten a crowd together. Let's say if I was the NDP and I want to take risks, you could have do an address the next day, get the time, get a big venue, invite the media, get not me on the stage and do a speech, a strong speech. Like, why not do something like she did in convention the other day? Her speech at convention was extremely good. Why were they not able to replicate that and make her relate to everyday Albertan and put her on prime time? There's no reason they couldn't have done that. Bring people in the room. Take questions. Do a scrum. Do everything that you need to do to be heard and own the cycle. Because last night, the UCP owned the cycle, and the UCP will own the cycle for the next 2 days. For not the reason we want them to own the cycle.
All right.
So they got to be careful and they need to listen, because I'm worried that it smells 2019 vibes all over again, and nothing has changed.
Okay. Well, I think that we've beaten that already sedated horse to death. I'm going to go for last words now. Deirdre, any final thoughts for the evening? Anything that we should be looking forward to as we head into, what are you going to be watching before we get to Sunday?
I'm going to be watching the messaging that's coming out of each party, and the NDP needs to step it up really fast, because the youth are owning this.
They own the shit out of social media and the news cycle right now.
Gotta say, even their graphics are far less "I just downloaded Canva-esque." There's a little bit of a polish to them. So I think what,
like,
you said earlier.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke to some people today. There's different people now in now. They brought more adults. It's sad to say. I shouldn't talk like that.
Seems that it's paid off for them a little bit. What are you going to be spending? I mean, obviously you're going to be convalescing, I hope, getting recovering and getting better and all of those good things.
Yeah.
But what are you going to be with all of this free time when you're not sleeping? What are you going to be watching?
Well, I'm going to be working. So, I put on a full day today. Yay me. I'm going to go through the mandates letters again, and I'm going to try to do a bingo list for the throne speech on next Tuesday, because it's next Tuesday at 3:00. Trying to figure out what the Alberta sovereignty and a strong confederation is going to look like. But yeah, my eyes are glued to the UCP and the NDP comms right now. I'm trying to see what they're going to do next.
All right. Well, I'm going to change up the regular plug here a little bit. This has been a
sobering.
Well, you know, here's the thing. As much as I love to say, hey, everybody, please support us on Patreon. Pretty please, because we need to buy more toys. The reality is I spent like 20 minutes going off on an EMS story. And part of the fire for that comes from there has been some very real tragedy that has been experienced by the greater EMS community just by magnitude of the situation. But certainly there's two paramedics who are experiencing a level of horror that I don't think anyone can imagine. And my heart absolutely breaks for them. So this week I'm for this show, I don't want you to give the breakdown any money, please. But if you can see through to, we've put it up on our social media a couple of times. If you can see through to going to the GoFundMe that is in support of the Erickson family, read the story there. It is so far beyond what anybody's worst nightmare would be. These are our two paramedics who have devoted their lives to being there for Albertans when Albertans needed them the most. And they are living through the worst possible nightmare that I think anyone can really imagine. And there's a GoFundMe to help make sure that they have the supports that they need as they navigate this thing. I'm not gonna tell the story here just because it's not my story to tell by any stretch of the imagination. But if you go to the GoFundMe on the Erickson family, if you have any bit of ability to throw them some support, they're definitely deserving. They definitely need it. And if you don't have that ability, I know that we have a lot of people who listen to the show who are on ACE or disability or limited incomes or anything like that. If you can even at least share that GoFundMe, just because, man, when you read the description in there, it's something else. We will be back on Sunday and we're going to be doing for sure, because I thought, you know, I spent a bunch of hours this week going, I'm going to fix the video problem. It's going to work this Wednesday. And clearly it's not. So there's going to be a little bit of a platform change in regards to how we're doing the video side of these things. But we will be back for Twitter Spaces on Sunday. We will be broadcasting live on the YouTubes and, God willing, even the Facebooks. And we're going to have Deirdre and Sarah in living color. It won't just be their profile pictures. And
I need to wash my hair.
I mean, that's why I do the baseball cap. That's why I do the baseball, because you can just tuck everything underneath and go back, and it's I don't look nearly as bad as I do without the baseball cap. But yes. I want to say a big thank you to everybody who listened to the Twitter Spaces live tonight, everybody who's watching the live stream tonight. And if you're listening to the podcast version of this, if you could leave a rating and a review, those things are very helpful for getting the podcast in front of more ears. That's a clumsy turn of phrase. And in the meantime, you know, one of the things that we identified on the show tonight, we've talked about it plenty of times before, is the fact that there's a lot of people who simply don't know the facts that disprove a lot of the bullshit that Ms. Smith spewed in her highly effective but profoundly dishonest speech last night. So maybe have a chat with somebody about, you know, pick one of the, there's so many lies to choose from, pick one of them and maybe have a chat just from someone and see if you can maybe get them to understand how the things actually work. Cause that's the only way that this needle's gonna move. And until Sunday, take care of yourselves and keep the conversation going. Mm-hmm.